Most historians agree that this is extremely unlikely. And in any case, further light, it seems to me, is shed on Condé's conduct by the fact that, having been released by the court, he then retired to the southwest of France, where he was joined by Calvin's lieutenant, Theodore de Beza, from Geneva. And here, in the summer of 1560, another plot was almost certainly hatched to capture the southeast of France from the French crown. In October of 1560, Condé was again arrested, and he was put on trial. Again, he refused to answer any questions, and before any real action could be taken against him, the king, Francis II, then died on the 5th of December, 1560. Now, the death of Francis II deepened the crisis of the monarchy, because when Francis died, the next in line to succeed him was Francis's brother, Charles IX, who was only 10 years old. This situation clearly required a regency government. But the natural regent, Antoine de Bourbon, the first prince of the blood, had forfeited his claim by his recent intrigues. As a result, the king's mother, Catherine de' Medici, became the regent. Catherine's politics have often been maligned and demeaned. She hasn't been a popular figure in history. I think at the very least we can say that her main wish was to try to preserve the independence of the crown. She understood its weakness in the situation of a regency amid all these competing aristocratic factions, and what she was trying to do was to maintain its independence by maintaining a balance between the rival houses. Since the Guises, the House of Guise, had recently dominated the crown, Catherine therefore now tried to tilt towards the House of Bourbon. Condé was now brought onto the king's council, which may seem surprising, as was a man by the name of Gaspard de Coligny, who was the nephew of Anne de Montmorency, member of the House of Montmorency, and also an open Huguenot. Antoine de Bourbon agreed to waive his rights to the regency, but in exchange he was appointed lieutenant general of the realm. That is to say, he was appointed supreme military commander, and in this position he now eased out the Duke of Guise. These political advances made by Huguenots at the court of Charles IX went hand in hand with a broader expansion of the Calvinist churches in the kingdom at large. I mentioned earlier that in 1559 the Calvinist churches in France had already held their first national synod, and in 1561 they would hold their second one. They were filled really with a kind of sense of triumph by these events of the early 1560s. You must recall that they were predestinarians. They believed that God directed everything, and to see God striking down Henry II and then subsequently striking down his son made them feel very confident. And they openly warned Catherine that God was not going to allow the French crown to continue to spill innocent blood. Therefore, in order to placate the Calvinists, in April of 1561, Catherine published an edict. It granted the Huguenots toleration in their own homes. They could worship privately, but not in public. This was not enough. And in all fairness to the Calvinists, we have to say that this would never be enough for any Christian denomination in early modern Europe. Religion was not simply a matter of private conviction. It was often seen as the foundation of community, and it was therefore a necessarily public right that people had to have. It wasn't any good just to be able to huddle in your basement and say your prayers. You needed to be able to exercise your religion publicly. In May of 1561, the Huguenot deputies to the Second National Synod of the French Protestant Church therefore drew up a petition to the crown, and they issued three key demands. First, they demanded the dismantling of the machinery of prosecution of heresy. Second, they demanded that the crown summon a council to reform the church, and on this council they wanted to send deputies as well. Third, they demanded the right of open public worship. Strikingly, these goals were in no small part achieved over the course of the next year. Indeed, the first demand, that heresy prosecution stop, had already been met. On the 28th of January 1561, Catherine had ordered the release of all those imprisoned on religious grounds and that all heresy proceedings be suspended. The second demand for the council was met in September of 1561 by the so-called Colloquy of Poissy. A Calvinist delegation from Geneva, led by Theodore of Beza, met with the assembled Catholic delegates, led by the Cardinal of Lorraine. The third demand for public worship was squeezed from the regency government in a highly modified form. On the 17th of January, 1562, the crown issued the Edict of Saint-Germain-en-Laye. This granted the Protestants provisional and conditional permission to meet for public worship. They had to meet outside of towns, unarmed, by day, and under royal supervision. But an essential step had been taken. Provisional public worship had been granted to French Protestants. Having reviewed the progress of Calvinism in France to 1562, our next lecture will then look at the failure of the effort at moderation and the degeneration into open warfare.